Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Eufy is sponsoring today's video. They reached out to me. I tested out their video lock. It is a game changer. I'm going to paint a picture for you for why I'm so excited to work with them. So you're getting home, your arms are loaded with groceries or packages or boxes or everything, and your keys are in your pocket. This drives me nuts. This happens all the time. I upgraded to the Eufy video lock, fingerprint, tap, I'm inside. And honestly, I also feel way safer. It's got this awesome built-in camera. So whether it's a package delivery or late night Uber order, I see exactly who's there right from my phone. There are no more mystery knocks. And the best part, this thing was such a breeze to set up. There's no wires, there's no drilling. There's also no monthly subscription fees. So if you are done fumbling with your keys, because I definitely am, search for Eufy Video Lock or head over to eufyofficial.com/video lock. Your front door, your sanity. Welcome to Success Story, the most useful podcast in the world. I'm your host, Scott D. Clary. The Success Story podcast is part of the HubSpot podcast network. The HubSpot podcast network has other great podcasts like Marketing Made Simple, hosted by Dr. JJ Peterson. Marketing Made Simple brings you practical tips to make your marketing easy and, more importantly, make it work. Now, if any of these topics sound interesting to you, you're going to love his show. How to write and deliver captivating speeches, how to market yourself into a new job, how design can help and potentially hurt your revenue, and how to create a social media ad strategy that works. If these topics hit home and they're things that you want to learn about, go listen to Marketing Made Simple wherever you get your podcasts. Today, you're going to hear an episode of my new podcast, Liquidity and Liquor. I co-host Liquidity and Liquor with Yosef Martin, a serial entrepreneur who sold his last company, BoxyCharm, for over $500 million. On Liquidity and Liquor, we have conversations about business, money, and life with some of the most interesting people in the world. You can download and subscribe to Liquidity and Liquor on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the bio that I found floating around the internet on you.
Yeah. Lies. All lies. Yeah.
So born and raised in landlocked Michigan.
True.
He discovered his untapped, no limit, love for the water while managing restaurants in Turks and Caicos.
That's a little dramatic and over the top.
It was then that an acquaintance invited him to serve as a mate on a sailboat delivery to earn extra cash.
Well, that's embellishment of sorts. I was out of money, going broke. In fact, I was broke. I think we had like $55 left in the bank account.
That's
and
tough.
There was a little 3x5 business card or index card.
Yeah.
Said, mate wanted for sailboat delivery down to the British Virgin Islands. No experience necessary.
That's all it takes.
How did you find yourself in Turks and Caicos serving with no money?
To get paid to do
well, the restaurant.
No. But I mean, so you made a move. You weren't born raised in Turks and Caicos.
No.
So you made a move.
Yeah, made a move.
Most people don't move to Turks and Caicos to serve at a restaurant.
I wasn't serving. I owned it.
Oh, you owned it. Oh, I thought you were serving. I thought it was like you were. Oh, so it was like business was not going well.
No.
I understand.
The casino that they were building right next door to my restaurant.
Okay.
Or within, I mean, very close proximity.
Okay.
Only made it up two floors when they ran out of money.
Oh, shit.
Right, so you owned the casino, but before you owned the restaurant, but before that, you were just trying to get a job. You got a job, and somehow you ended in Turks and Caicos, and you opened a restaurant.
I'd had a couple of restaurants prior to that.
So this is incorrect, because it says managing
restaurants. How did you come up with $55?
He owned a restaurant in Turks and Caicos.
Yeah, it's like I said, not everything you read is true.
Really?
Yeah.
I've never experienced that. Really? Not everything on the internet is true.
No, it must be true, but it is on the internet.
Oh. Okay, okay. So, so did you sell or what happened?
No, I just had to give it up.
Oh, shit.
So you shut down those restaurants?
Yeah.
Oh. I can imagine you serving people. You don't like it. Imagine Captain comes to people like, I don't like the food, but tough luck, okay, you pussy.
All right.
You'll eat what I give you.
Yeah. You'll eat what I give you, yeah.
So at 35, you obtained your
captain's. That part's true.
That's when you obtained your captain's license, left.
No, that's when I started embarking on the journey to get it.
Okay.
You can't get a captain's license in a year.
Impossible. How long does it take?
Well, in order for the Coast Guard to allow you to even sit for your first basic exam to get your master's, you have to spend 720 days at sea, underway. It means the boat's got to be off the dock and moving. Hmm. And you have to verify that 720 days. Somebody's got to sign for your time. Mm-hmm. And if they lie about your time, they're subject to, I don't know, 5 years in prison and $250,000 fine.
So your minimum two and a bit years to do this if you went out every single day.
If you started tomorrow,
yeah,
you'd have to stay out at sea for 2 years.
Yeah.
And so how long it took you from the day you started to actually obtain the license?
Took me about 5 years.
Okay. Wow. So it was and pretty intensive.
I worked at it hard.
Wow.
I was working on boats for nothing. Hmm. You don't have to pay me. Just sign my sea service form.
Counts towards the hours.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Counts for. And I didn't, I mean, I could go on board as a cook, a stew.
That seems silly though, no?
Whatever capacity you're on board that boat in counts as time at sea.
That's very
different.
As long
as you're away from the dock.
That's different than like pilot hours though. Because pilot hours, you have to be flying the plane for so many hours to get the license.
But there's a certain regimen that you have to go through for pilot hours.
Yeah.
You know, you have to go to class.
You know, for a second, I had some respect to it because they got to make sure you actually run a boat and you navigate through waves for 2 years. But no, like, no, you can be a cook. So it doesn't really give you technical experience, well, specific experience.
You could be a cook. And I've known some chefs that have decided that they wanted to get into the other aspect of it. Mm-hmm. And so they've taken their sea time and then they've gravitated towards, you know, learning the deck and learning the mechanics and learning everything else that they need
to
learn.
They should be.
Because when you sit down to take the test, you could spend your 2 years as a cook at sea. But when you sit down to take the test, it's going to show exactly what you know.
You have to have experience. You have to already, yeah.
And you don't get that just by being a chef at sea.
Interesting.
Before we continue with this, obviously, completely factual bio, 100% accurate representation of your life. Mm-hmm. What does being a captain actually mean? So the difference, is it that you have people that are technically on staff? Is that like one direct report on staff on a boat? Does that make you a captain? Does that mean that you have to go through that whole process?
No, you are in, when you're a captain, you are in command of the vessel and anybody and everybody who's on board that vessel, you are responsible for. Whether it's a passenger, whether it's an engineer, whether it's a stewardess, if it's a dog, you're responsible for all lives, all souls on board.
You know what? Do you remember that case, the Italian captain with the cruise ship that tilled over in the Mediterranean?
Yeah.
That jumped the ship. I mean, what's your take on this one?
He was such a dumbass.
I don't know the story.
Okay, so in the Mediterranean, there was a ship that was a captain. We got to talk.
No.
You got to talk to your parents about it. Okay, so your phone is on.
That's the network calling right now.
You need to deck it?
No.
No, okay.
And what is it, Andy Cohen?
Tell Andy we're busy, right? Tell Andy Cohen, listen.
I didn't mean I was blowing the network off intentionally. It's just for a little while.
This is live podcast. I mean, raw podcast over here, guys. We're not editing anything for you guys. That's how cool we are. So anyway, what happened was there was a cruise ship, a large one in the Mediterranean, maybe like 1,000 passengers.
Scatino. That was his name.
Yeah.
Captain Scatino.
He was going really close to the shore because he was with a girl and he wanted to show her how nice the shore is. So he came too close to a point that it actually hit the ground and the whole boat tilled over. And then eventually he escaped the boat before everybody else because his job is to stay.
If you looked at it, if you looked at the topography, because they've shown it 100 times, the island sloped down very steeply. Mm-hmm. And you could get close to the island, theoretically.
Not that close.
But there's a prescribed course that all cruise ships have for, they've got a route mm-hmm. that they have to follow. And he just decided, well, he wouldn't do that because he was trying to impress his chick. And he ended up killing a bunch of people, 35 people.
Oh, yeah, people died. Well, I mean, he's not intentionally, but yeah.
I didn't know the story.
The thing was, he was supposed to stay on the boat and try to save, but he ended up jumping the boat and saving himself first. And that was...
This lame-ass excuse that he used was, I felt I could better coordinate the rescue efforts from shore.
Well, it must be true, just like the internet.
How many people were on this boat?
A couple hundreds. It's a big cruise ship.
Oh, maybe I have heard about this, but I'm not clocking it. Yeah. So it's not a small. It's not a
no,
small.
No. It's not. Yeah. No. It's a big deal.
It was a major
Carnival cruise line type.
It was a major catastrophe, and it took a couple of years for them to get that upright
and move it. Yeah.
Because they were afraid it was just going to slide down the slope of the mm-hmm. island, and fall into 5,000-6,000 feet of water and be irretrievable.
Jeez.
So it was quite an engineering feat to get it up.
So what does it take to move from a boat? You're doing about 200 feet or so on mm-hmm. boats, right? To say like a Carnival Cruise Line size ship. Like what's the difference? Like it's just a more experience based on the size or number of people. What's the...
More experience. And when you get into the like cruise ship type thing, you're dealing with department heads. Mm-hmm. You're dealing with a full complement of bridge officers. So rarely... Are you driving the boat?
Interesting.
It's the third officer or second mm-hmm. officer. They're at the helm. Mm-hmm. And you're telling them, you know, what route to follow.
Yeah.
You program it in the GPS.
What is harder, in your opinion? A cruise ship, one of the largest cruise ships in the world to captain that, or a boat where you're actually at the helm?
Well, the difference is you're responsible for more lives when you're on a cruise ship. But to me, it doesn't really make any difference. One life, 100, 1,000.
Yeah.
You're still, you know, do you want to be responsible for one person dying?
No, obviously not.
If that's
not.
The only yeah. person you've got on board?
You know, I had a lady working for me, and she was CMO of a major cruise liner. I don't want to say which one. And she told me, you have no idea how many people fall off the cruise boats. No, mostly when they're drunk. They don't report this. Do we call the Coast Guard? The boat never stops. They call the Coast Guards to pick them up, but they fall. And many times they don't find them, and you don't even hear about it.
Is that normal?
She was working for me for about 2 years, and I was trying to get it out of her. She's like, just give me a number. Like, I can't tell you. I'm never going to tell you that. It's crazy. And it's a big, big cruise line. Hmm. Yeah. How many fall from your boat?
And that's zero. None. Well, I've only had one.
Fall, yeah. But you retrieve them, right?
Yeah.
You stop. Yeah, they don't stop. The other ones don't stop. They just keep on going.
That's
insane, right?
Yeah. Man, that took a dark turn. Okay. Yeah. Let's keep going down this jovial bio because it's less dramatic.
We're going from people falling off yeah. cruise ships to joviality. Yeah.
Okay. So you obtained your captain license after... you said 5 years, left the restaurant business behind to pursue his newfound passion. And then since then, the quote, Running Against the Tide author, that's your book.
Yes, it is.
Has commanded more than a dozen super yachts. This is, next line is going to kill me and you. Lovingly known as Stud of the Sea. Is that how you're known?
I don't know if lovingly is quite accurate. But it's something that's not going anywhere, obviously.
He values the special bonds he forms on deck and always puts safety of everyone on board above all else. I think that's fair. That's
yeah.
true.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're excited to... this is probably some sort of trailer or prelude for a show. It says you're excited to return to the Caribbean this season with familiar faces, Chef Raisha Hargrove, Chief Stu Fraser Olander, mm-hmm. and then... And then it goes into more about the show.
Yeah.
So interesting career path, because you were a captain and now all of a sudden you're finding yourself in the spotlight, which is an interesting pivot, because now you're just taking your work and you're broadcasting it out to the world. So maybe just like walk through, you know, your career, some of the things that have, I think that it's really cool to see your background, like some of the stories that you've dealt with over the years. I don't know if they're good stories, bad stories, crazy stories, but then also the pivot from, you know, you have a very personal, probably not public life, to taking, you know, the thing that you're good at and broadcasting it out to the world. How did that sort of manifest? How is that going? Obviously, you've been doing it for a while now, so you're kind of, you know, you're comfortable with it. But was that difficult? Was it hard? Was it easy?
I actually didn't give it much thought. I just wanted people to stay out of my way, let me do my job. You can film all you want. Just stay out of my way, you know.
What do you like more, the actual reality show or being a captain?
To me, there's not much difference, because I don't run my boat any differently. Mm.
Well, I guess the way we want to look at this question is the reality show kind of like put your personal life now outside of the boat too. If it was shooting outside of the boat, but now you cannot sail, what would you say? Okay, you have to get rid of one, either reality show or sailing. What would you choose?
The reality show.
You would get rid of the reality show?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah?
Well, I mean, how do you stop being a captain?
So your identity is Captain Lee in the reality show, no, or the actual captain?
I've been a captain for 30, almost 40 years. Hmm. I've been doing it on TV for 10.
But when you do it on TV, is it not like, so you're saying, you know, film me, fine. But get out of my way, let me do my job. But
exactly.
But I'm sure there's a lot of bullshit that comes with being on TV, because you see it with even like Real Housewives and whatnot. Like there's like architected drama.
Yeah, we don't script anything.
Everything we see is real.
The cameras start rolling at 6:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
And for the next 6 weeks, they don't shut down except to change out the media cards.
That's it. And is it like pressure performing, doing the job while cameras are around? Or is that actually the chaos
I don't pay any attention to.
Well, I noticed.
I'm going to do what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
You know, you can film it and you are filming
but,
it.
But Captain, what I see, because I've been watching the show, I'm like Scott that didn't do his homework, and I do my homework.
What did I do wrong today?
No, so on the show, I've been watching it for years. I noticed that I would say 80% of the time it's going to be about the crew, you, the mm-hmm. rest of the team. And then 20% is about the people. So, which makes sense, because if you want to go and put a story, it's just you want people kind of like to relate to the character. So you don't want to go and focus on people that come and go and you're never going to see them again. You want to focus on the crew, and it makes sense. And in between,
sure,
you have. So when you go and you see the crew every time going in and out and everything else, like, the crew is not like the guest, right? You say, well, the guest, as soon as you put a camera, boof, person is a different person. Is it the same with the crew? It's the same? They change when they see the camera?
I think when the network hires crew, they look for a specific type, a personality, you know, whether it's an A or a B type personality, but they look for somebody that's probably going to play well on camera, going to play well on TV, and they see certain qualities in that person that are going to be entertaining. Mm-hmm. And the last thing that you want to see happen is, as soon as the camera starts rolling, all of a sudden this person that you hired and their personality disappear. Mm-hmm. And then they morph into something that you've never seen before, and you go, oh, Jesus Christ.
Do you have any say on this?
What have I got now?
Do you have any say on all this when we're talking about that? Like when you look at, when you guys choose the cast members, do you have any say in saying, I don't like this person? Or
there are past cast members that I wouldn't work with again.
Okay.
But as far as present, you know, when we're getting ready to start a new season, here's your cast. But I do reserve the right to fire whoever I choose.
Yeah. You're still a captain, so that doesn't change.
That's one of the things that was tough for production to get used to, is that once you untie those lines from the dock, there's only one authority out there. And that's the captain, period.
So that
no matter what, any person on that boat, the captain has the authority to confine them to quarters, put them ashore, whatever he needs to do to maintain the safety and the integrity of the vessel.
And come closer to the mic.
On board.
Yeah.
But that's, so I think actually that's my point. It's interesting because when you operated like pre-TV, you didn't have to put up with any bullshit. You didn't have to put up with any bad hires, or if you did, you can get rid of them easily. So now it's like...
It still applies.
Still applies.
Same thing.
And do they, like, even the cast they pick, like you said, you don't have a hand in actually picking them, but what if you have a whole bunch of monkeys on board right now and you have to deal with what you have? They're characters, they're personalities. I'm just equating it to if I was forced into... in a business, a team of people that were just all characters, didn't have proficiency, or they had arguable proficiency, but they weren't great. They were more hired for, you know, how crazy they could look on camera. That would be an absolute nightmare, no?
It would be if that's what they actually did, but they don't. Because they do have to have a certain degree of proficiency, because they have to get their STCW. They do have to have their credentials.
Okay.
So they never brought you an unprofessional crew or something. Maybe there was one or two bad apples, but
there
the rest
may be
were pretty
people
decent.
People that are green, just starting out, not as proficient as you'd like them to be, but teachable. Mm-hmm. I can deal with that.
Yeah.
Give me. So how many people have you fired that were part of the cast throughout the years?
Well, since the show started, I've been trying to get through one season where I didn't fire at least one person.
Wow.
And I haven't made it yet.
Wow.
So every year.
Don't you think they want it to happen though now? And they're like, you know, we need him to be that badass
they're planting people.
I think my record for one season.
This guy's an idiot. Bring him over. Like, he's going to get fired. We need one.
I think my record for one season is 4.
Wow.
If you look at it, that's half the crew. Almost half the crew.
Wow. Which one stayed with you the longest? How many have stayed with you? Did anyone stay with you throughout the entire 9-10 years that you've been doing this?
No, nobody's made it the full 10 years. Kate stayed with me the longest at 6 years.
Okay. And people leave because of other reasons, right? I mean, they become famous, they have other options.
They get tired of it, they want to do something else.
Get married.
Yeah, a lot of reasons. They get pregnant.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. So when you get on board, like, did you have any people that came on board that you guys had to break up fights and drunk and stuff like that? Does it ever happen?
Physical? No.
No?
No, physical is just something that we don't tolerate at all. You know? Yeah. I do have the authority to put somebody in cuffs and put them in a room and lock them in there if I have to. Never in all my years of yachting have I ever had to resort to that.
No.
You're fired. You're a dick. Get out of here.
But you deal with, like...
Here's your plane ticket to back wherever we hired you from.
Yeah.
Go away.
No, I'm talking about the guests, not the crew member.
No, we've never had any guests even attempt to get physical.
Yeah. What's the...
We had some really dumbasses on board.
What did you have? What's the... Give us a story, something, a couple of things that happened.
Oh, Dolores was one of the best ones. She got all liquored up, and she had this nice evening gown on at dinner, right? After dinner, she goes, gosh, it'd be so great to go for a midnight swim. I said, well, it probably would be, but... No, that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So she strolls down to the swim platform. I said, do not go in the water. If somebody goes overboard in broad daylight with current, wind, waves, it's virtually impossible to spot them again once you take your eyes off of them.
Wow.
Now, if you can imagine, you're just trying to spot a head, you can't see anything below the waterline. A head, this big. Now I could throw a bright fluorescent green or orange basketball or a beach ball out there, you know, the size of the moon, and you'd be hard pressed to find it. And she wants to dive in the water in a black dress and middle black hair in the middle of the night. And I tell her she can't do it. And she looks at me and just gives me the biggest fuck you look in the world. And dove in.
Oh, God.
I was pissed. And I'm the kind of guy, I wear my emotions on my sleeve. I was pissed. I got her ass back there. And I said, your fucking charter just ended. And I said, any of the people that are here with you, if they don't like it, their charter can end too. That's where I left it. And so I got up the next morning and I called the primary.
What is that?
The primary is the, he's the guy that, the individual that is paying for the charter. You know, he gets first dibs on everything, the best room, you know, mm-hmm. the master, all of that sort of thing, because he's picking up the tab.
Mm-hmm. We got to be primaries, you know, when we're doing yeah. this stuff. I want to be a primary.
It's good to be primary.
Yeah, it is good.
Without a doubt.
I'm a primary.
So I bring the primary into the wheelhouse, and I said, listen. I said, she went over the line. I said, here's the deal. I said, you guys are more than welcome to stay on board. We'll continue with the charter. But she's leaving. And if you have an issue with that, you're more than welcome to join her. But her charter's over. She's gone. And I had one of the stewardesses go down, pack her bags, and escort her off the boat, put her in a tender. And she got about less than 50 yards away from the boat in the tender, and I'll be goddamned if she didn't do it again.
She jumped in?
I was standing on the aft deck, and I was looking, and she bailed out of the tender as the tender's moving.
Well, what the fuck's she doing?
Proving a point, giving me the last finger, I guess.
That's a little strange, but...
He said, what do you want me to do, Captain? I said, if you can pick her up, pick her up. If you can't, what the hell?
Wow.
Do you ever...
Well, that was like when, I don't know, well, you don't watch it much.
No.
I got to talk to his parents. He's not doing his homework.
We had a girl named Rocky.
Yeah.
That she was a stewardess. And she got her knickers in a wad because I got rid of a chef named Leon, who just wasn't a very good chef. Caused a fire in the galley because he didn't clean the oven, that kind of stuff.
But that's a big fucking deal, though. That's
not... Yeah, I mean, a fire under the boat.
It's...
yeah, we put the fire out, but the boat sank. You can only pour so much water on a fire before the boat's going to sink. So he ended up getting terminated, and she was just so upset about it that she decided, I'm out of here too. So she takes off her clothes, takes off her microphone, and she dives overboard. And Eddie's on there, and he goes, Cap, he says, Rocky just went over the side. I said, good.
I just don't understand why that's the go-to move.
She's swimming to another boat. I said, they can have her. They're welcome to her.
Have you ever had a guest or somebody that's obviously paid for the charter that you've had to shut the charter down, that's been so pissed they've gone after you, tried to sue, get money back?
I've never had anybody go after us legally.
No.
Or any other way. No. Season one, I did have a group of guys that, you know, if they had kept it to themselves, what they do behind closed doors is none of my business. But they were just openly doing cocaine. Mm-hmm. And I can't have that. You know, I put everybody's career at stake. I put the vessel at stake. Yeah. That's at risk. Because you get caught with drugs on board, they take the boat.
Yeah.
I go to jail.
It's your responsibility.
I'm going to be there a long time. And guess what? Caribbean jails are
not
no
fun.
Joke.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like here where they treat you with kid gloves. You think jail here is bad? Try a Caribbean jail. No, thank you. And so I took the charter back to the dock and said, "You're all out of here." And then I sent a crew member with each one of them as they packed their bags to make sure they didn't leave a little present behind, and then get to the airport
And call
them customs and go like, yeah, you know that boat down in at D-Dock at Port-au-Plaisance? Uh-huh. They got drugs on board. You might want to check them out. Next thing I know, I got customs and immigration down there with the dogs, and I'm still in it. So after they left, well, I made sure that somebody went with them to pack.
Yeah.
So that, you know, I had a crew member with every one of them. And then after they disembarked, I had customs come on and bring the dogs and sweep the whole boat.
Yeah, you wouldn't be the one making the phone call. You don't want them to make the phone call.
Yeah.
That's smart. Stressful.
Yeah. I said we had some people on board. They're gone now. I made sure I waited until after their plane had left to make sure they were out of the country.
Yeah.
I didn't want to see them get thrown in jail.
Yeah.
And called up customs and said,
"Did you ever have
bring the dogs?"
Did you ever have a cruise where you said, it's just not the day. Like, I wish I didn't have to do this one." Maybe through weather, people, something, just everything goes wrong.
Oh, every captain has been out at sea, and due to circumstances beyond his control, finds himself in a situation where he goes, "Oh God, I am not getting paid anywhere near enough to go through this shit."
Mm.
And you bitch about it, you moan about it, until you get to shore. As soon as you get to the dock, get tied up, go have a couple of pops.
But don't you have raiders?
Then you go like, "Ah, it wasn't so bad."
But don't you have raiders to go and tell you? Can't you see already on the screen, like, "No, I shouldn't go on that. This is just the weather system coming over here. We should just not."
No, if you're ever in any doubt, you don't.
Yeah.
It's just that simple.
I'm just thinking of
And people will raise hell about it. "Why can't we leave the dock? Why can't we do this?" And it's not a democracy. You don't get a boat.
It's like Jordan Belfort and when he sank his yacht.
No, it's more like the helicopter ride with Kobe Bryant.
The same situation.
Same thing where he was kind of like telling his guy, let's go. And he told him it's
pilot
not the right
weather. Pilot should have drawn the line.
Yeah.
And said
yeah.
No.
That's your responsibility to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, so if you...
The consequences are very steep.
Expensive or death?
Yeah.
Only two options.
Yeah. What are you bartering with? Someone's life for a potential good time?
I don't barter.
You shouldn't.
I don't. Never have. You can get all kinds of pissed off. You can jump up and down. You can tell me I'm never going to work in this business again. I don't care. Hell, I was looking for a job when I got this one.
It's because you're dealing with, I assume you're dealing with egos that have the money.
Huge egos.
Usually yeah. People that come to those charters, they're
don't
well
you
off.
You know who I am. Yeah. I know exactly who you are, and I don't give a shit.
No, can you imagine the types of people that rent charter yachts if they're not getting their way?
Yeah, well, I mean, you...
Billionaires are never, ever used to somebody saying no. That's just not in their vocabulary. That's not how their life works. That's for other people, but not for them,
mm-hmm.
You know, because they go, "I don't care what it costs, make it happen." And they can do that, where most people...
Yeah, most people around them are going to be yes people. And that's where...
Like 99% mm-hmm. of them are probably
yes people.
They're
not used to having one telling them no, confronting
them. Yeah,
and
then they run into me and...
What's...
let's just say it's not always pretty.
And the average person that books a charter, are they, you know, DECA millionaires, over 100? Are they billionaires? What's the average type of persona you deal with?
Well, the ones that you find that'll book a 200 or 250 or 300-foot yacht are generally in the billionaire category. And they might do that 3-4 times a year.
A billionaire, I mean, it's 150 grand, right, for a weekend or for a week or something?
I know, like the last boat we were on is like close. You're probably all in with everything, tip, alcohol, fuel, all the rest of that stuff, probably $500,000 a week.
Okay. A week.
A week. And
how many guests?
12.
12 guests.
Maximum.
Yeah.
That's all you can have legally.
Mm. Okay. So if you technically own a boat, like my neighbors on the other side, they own a boat. It's like 120 foot or so on. It's not 200, but it's 100. And they're on the boat about 120 days out of the year.
That's a lot.
Yeah. And they told me they have a crew. They have 7 men crew. And it cost them about $1.1 million a year. That's the math.
So with 7 crew, that means it's probably maybe a 100-120 foot boat.
Yeah, 120. Yeah. That's what it is, yeah.
It's probably a little light at 7, probably needs 8 to do it properly. But yeah, that's about right.
Maybe it's not including the captain. I don't remember exactly. It might be 7 or 8, something like that. Mm-hmm. And then what it also counts is the fixing, because there's always every year they have to go and put it in some repairs or some sorts or something like that.
It's a boat. You always have to put money in it.
Yeah, always.
What are the?
It's a depreciating asset.
Yeah.
It's just never, ever going to be worth what
you're paying. It's in salt water all the time, so.
Yeah. But you buy it, so what do you put towards it? Say you buy, I don't know boat economics. It's a very rich conversation I hope to have someday. But when you buy it for, say you buy a boat for anything from $25 to $50 million, what's the maintenance cost on something like that?
You're going to spend, you have to have at least $5 million every year if you buy a $50 million boat.
That's a lot.
$5 to $7.5 million every year that you don't care about, that you could just take, put in a pile out in the street, put a match to it, and walk away and go like, anybody bring the hot dogs?
Yeah, but the way you think about this is, if you have a business that makes you about $50 million a year, you're not going to take it all to heaven.
I know a lot of entrepreneurs listen to this show, and NetSuite has been a huge supporter for entrepreneurs, for business owners, because there's one thing that we all know. Business is about making money, and it's about your bottom line. And the less you spend on the nuts and bolts of running your business, the more profits you keep. But these days, everything is costing more. Supplies, people, shipping. It squeezes your margins, and I've been there, juggling multiple systems for finance, inventory, you name it. Each with its own costs and its own set of headaches. That's why I made the switch to NetSuite by Oracle. It's changed our company. Think about it. NetSuite is one of the top financial systems out there. It puts your whole business on one platform, accounting, finance, the works. One data source for everyone. There's no more mismatched info. And because it's in the cloud, it slashes your IT costs. No more servers, no more updates. Just access NetSuite from anywhere. With one integrated suite, your overhead drops big time. And here's the real win. Efficiency. Everything's connected in NetSuite. Costs are ridiculous lately. Find a proven way to reduce your expenses and get better performance out of your team. It's a no-brainer, and that's what NetSuite offers. Over 37,000 companies have figured this out already. You have to join them. Right now, through to April 15th, NetSuite's got an incredible, flexible financing plan. Check it out and see the savings yourself at netsuite.com/ScottClary. That's netsuite.com/ScottClary. Just a quick question. Have you ever had one of those oh no moments when you realize that you accidentally deleted a huge file? Or worse, your whole computer dies. I know I have. It's happened to me a lot, but don't sweat it. The sponsor of today's episode, Backblaze, they have your back. It is unlimited backups for all your Macs, your PCs, or even your whole company, and it's really affordable, under $100 a year. If you're running a business, they take the stress out of protecting everyone's data. If you need more bells and whistles for compliance, so on and so forth, they have enterprise options too. Honestly, losing data sucks, but Backblaze makes getting it back easy. They have restored billions of files. They offer tons of restore options, including rapid recovery in an event of data loss or ransomware. And you can access your backed up data from everywhere and anywhere in the world using their web app, iOS, or Android apps. It's been recommended by the New York Times, Inc., Macworld, PC World, LifeWire, Wired, Tom's Guide, 9to5 Mac, and tons more. And best, you can try it fully featured with no risk at backblaze.com/story. They set up that link for all Success Story podcast listeners. That is a no-risk free trial at backblaze.com/story. Seriously, back up your stuff. I don't know about you, but the idea of being harassed, scammed, or even worse, all because somebody found my personal information online, that's terrifying. Our political opinions, our addresses, even stuff about our families, it's out there for anyone to grab. And did you know that data brokers are allowed to sell information on over 98% of Americans? It's scary stuff. That's why I've partnered with Delete Me. I personally use Delete Me. They're a big friend of the podcast because I put myself out there online. So safety is a huge concern. It's really scary how easy it is to find someone's details and information, but Delete Me creates a layer of protection that we all need. You tell Delete Me what you want gone, and they make it disappear from those sketchy data broker sites. And Delete Me doesn't stop. They constantly monitor the web to keep your information off those lists. It's like having a privacy watchdog that never sleeps. You need to take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me. They're giving a special discount for all Success Story podcast listeners. Get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/success and use promo code success at checkout. The only way to get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/success and enter code success at checkout. joindeleteme.com/success. Hiring as a small business owner is a major pain. That's why LinkedIn is supporting today's episode. You need people with the right skills and experience, but finding them can take forever. It is incredibly frustrating to keep seeing candidates who just aren't a good fit, and that's why LinkedIn Jobs has been a game changer. Let me tell you a little story. We needed to hire a graphic designer, somebody with specific tech and software knowledge and the ability to truly understand our brand. And I started with all the usual job boards, and it's the same old story. Tons of irrelevant applications. No one's really matching my needs. I tried LinkedIn Jobs, and the quality of candidates was just on another level. People with impressive portfolios, relevant expertise. I finally felt like I was interviewing the right people. That's truly the power of LinkedIn's massive professional network. You're tapping into this huge pool of talent you simply wouldn't find on other sites. It's about finding those niche candidates you actually need. And with the right people in front of you, hiring becomes a breeze. Did you know that 86% of small businesses find a qualified candidate on LinkedIn Jobs within 24 hours? That is how well their system works. Honestly, do yourself a favor and try LinkedIn Jobs next time you're hiring. You can post your job for free at linkedin.com/excellence. That's linkedin.com/excellence. Terms and conditions apply, but it's definitely worth trying out. Today's sponsor is BetterHelp. Now, hear me out. If you magically had an extra hour in a day, and I know sometimes that's the only time we get to ourselves, what would you do with it? Maybe you would catch up on sleep. Maybe you'd hit the gym. Maybe you'd finally get into that book that you've been eyeing. We're always wishing for more time. But what if we focused on how we use the time that we have? Think about what really lights you up. What would change in your life if you made that a priority? Do you even know what that thing is? Well, therapy has been a game changer for me, not because of some terrible thing that's happened to me, but because it's helped me figure out what matters, how to manage tough emotions, how to be a better friend, a partner, business person, and just really person all around. So if you're even a little curious about therapy, if you want to help think through what matters to you, what to prioritize, how to live your life, try BetterHelp. It's totally online and works around your crazy schedule. No awkward waiting rooms. Just get matched with a licensed therapist and start making the most of the time you've already got. Learn how to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/successpod today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/successpod.
You have already enough in the side.
7 million is a lot.
Well, I mean, you can depreciate some of it on taxes.
Yeah.
If you go and you bring in some people, you write it off as expenses. And then the rest of it comes down to, okay, look, that boat is owned by me. I'm going to go and spend third of my money on leisure. Third of my money goes to boats, jets, all that stuff. And yeah, that's the numbers. That's what it is. I mean, in their case, it's one point. And look, when you have 7-man crew, they make you all the food you want. They have enough food to last them for very, like, they have enough fuel to go from the Mediterranean to Florida and come back. And you get that boat and it's always there. That crew always serves you. And it's 1.1 million a year. And you live like a king.
What's the crew doing when they're not traveling?
Working.
Working what? Say the boat's
there's
in dock.
There's always something to do on a boat.
So it's full time, 40 hours always. Plus. I mean, well, yeah. I guess. Okay.
Usually, like with my crew, it's a 9-to-5 job when we don't have guests on board.
Okay.
So, start at 8 o'clock in the morning, we're done by 4 or 5 in the afternoon.
But what kind of work do you do when there is no one there? Were you fixing the boat, cleaning again from yesterday?
There's always something on a boat that's broke.
Uh-huh.
Always.
Yeah.
I don't care. The boat that just came out and it's brand new and nobody's ever set foot on it yet, it's got something that's broke.
Unreal. That's fucking real. That's crazy.
Yeah. There's never, nothing is ever perfect.
Yeah, I don't know anyone of my friends that own boats, no matter how new they are or whatever it is, there's a third of the time it's somewhere in the garage and they're complaining.
But stop and think, it
has, garage,
to,
I mean,
it has to be cleaned. Yeah. It has marina. To be cleaned from top to bottom, at least once a week, maybe twice a week, depending on where you're docked at.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're docked anywhere where there's like a highway or something, you know, just the road dust means you're washing that boat 3 times a week. Now, if you've got a 200-foot boat,
it takes some time to do.
You've got 4 deckhands that are out there busting their ass.
Yeah.
8 hours a day, and as soon as, you know, for 2 days, and then one day they don't have to wash it, and then the next day they do.
Yeah.
And you start all over again. And if it's washed, then it's got to be dried. And the decks have to be scrubbed.
And then for those
and
types...
And the tenders have to be scrubbed. And then you've got all the toys on board that have to be exercised and used. Because otherwise, the next time you go out with the owner... And he says, I want you to put all the sea bobs in the water and you have them run them. Battery's dead.
Mm-hmm.
Well, why is the battery dead? Well, we didn't use it. We just left it. And then, yeah, no. It doesn't
work. It's a full-time salary.
There is literally a checklist, I guess, that you have to have for that's proprietary for every boat. Right, that you say, I mean, the commonalities, but
the boat has to always be ready to go when the owner calls up and says, I want to go out. So it can't be, well, we're in the middle of washing the boat. And if he says, I want to go out tomorrow, then you have to be ready to go. Crew has to be ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's got to be on their game. So that means all of the laundry has to be done, all of the beds have to be made, every refrigerator has to be stocked, the jacuzzi's got to be ready to be functional, can't be any leaks, the gym's got to be set up, got to have all the towels in, you got to make sure that the sauna's working properly, gets up to the proper temperature. You can't have any dust or any fingerprints on any mirrors anywhere on the boat in all of the guest rooms, all 6 of them, if there happens to be 6 on board. And, you know, just you have to think what it takes to maintain a house. Well, quadruple that for a boat.
That's what I'm understanding. So it's when you buy a boat, you buy a full-time staff.
Yes. Because after a certain size, your insurance company requires that you have what they call manning requirements.
Mm.
And your insurance company says you will have a captain on board all the time. You will have a first officer on board. You will have 2 engineers. You will have somebody for the interior. You will have a certain amount of deckhands. And this is the bare minimum that you have to hire. Now, usually the bare minimum that they say you have to have is nowhere near what you have to have when you've got guests on board. You could easily double it.
I didn't realize this.
Yeah, no, but boat is expensive business. Yeah, it's a very expensive.
Your captains, entry level for a captain is $1,000 per foot per year.
That's a good benchmark for figuring out a salary, okay.
That's for entry level. You want to hire, like, if somebody came up to me and said, well, I'm going to pay you, you know, I've got a 230-foot boat, and I'll pay you $1,000 a foot per year. You better go find somebody else. Because, no, I'm not doing it. That's your rookie. And if you think hiring experience is expensive, what do you pay for inexperience?
Yeah.
And then you'll go, yeah, uh-huh, okay, I get it now. I mean, it's like when you're flying. Do you want to see a 22-year-old kid come strolling out of the cockpit of a 747?
No, they're not. No.
Imagine that, right?
What about the rest of the salary? So you have your captain, that's a good benchmark. But then say you have...
Your chef is going to cost you, on a boat, say a 50-meter, 165 feet, is going to cost you $8,000-$9,000 a month. And they're only going to work 11 months out of the year, but you're going to pay them for 12. And if you're working for 12 months out of the year, you're going to pay them for 13.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have a couple of engineers. Your chief engineer, if he's worth a damn, is probably going to make in the neighborhood of just a little bit less than what you're paying your captain.
Oh, wow.
So if you're
damn, paying, it's a lot of money.
These engineers. My mom told me, go be an engineer. I didn't listen to her.
They're not cheap salaries.
Engineers are, if you're paying your captain $15,000 a month, odds are you're paying your engineer $12 to $13 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's got an assistant. Because you have to have two engineers in a boat that size. It's preferable.
Mm-hmm.
Your chief stew is going to be making on a boat that size $8,000 a month. Plus, you're going to have to pay for everything that they do. You're going to pay for their shoes. You're going to pay for their uniforms. You're going to pay for their belts. You're going to pay for their shirts. Socks. The only thing you're not going to pay for is their underwear. You're going to buy all their toothpaste. You're going to buy all their beauty products. Buy all their toothbrushes, their deodorant, shampoo, conditioner. They're going to have one closet down in the crew mess that is designated just for crew toiletries.
See, this is where you listen and you set yourself up. If that is not a motivation to make it in life, then what is? Instead of thinking
about... You've also scared everyone shitless.
No. That's what... you're right. You know what? It scares everyone or almost everyone. But if your mind is...
Yes,
No. I need to go and understand that I need to have an abundant amount of cash that's going to be such an insignificant amount.
Mm-hmm.
Because the last thing you want to do is nickel and dime those stuff. You said that is such an insignificant amount that I need to go and produce with a lifestyle business or investments that get me passive income.
I don't
think
anybody thinks about even when they're coming up, even when they've sold a company for, $100 million. Nobody's thinking about the residual cost of owning a boat.
Absolutely they do. When you sell a business...
$100 million isn't really enough.
No.
You can own a boat, but it's going to be really small.
Yeah.
Yeah, not like those.
Yeah, exactly. No, I'm thinking you look at a nice number, $100 million, great exit for a great entrepreneur, right? But then all of a sudden, that's not anything.
Well, if you have...
How you want to live.
Yeah.
No, but the idea is this, okay? When you cash out... The first thing you start thinking about is how can I produce income going forward? If you sell the cash cow that you have, you get a lot of principal out of it, right? You don't want to touch the principal. And our mind is going like, all right, how can I produce money out of it? So say you put the money in the stock market, it's a bull market, and every month you get yourself an extra $2 million, $1 million a month just from profit. You still understand that it's just a matter of time. And you said, you know, it's not going to last forever, but I made $12 million. But if it's an actual business that gets you an additional after taxes, $12 million, you said, well, I have already 100 in the bank. I have a boat that I purchased, whatever. And it cost me, say, $500,000 a month to maintain it. But I fucking love boats. And I love it that much that I said that would be where I put my money.
But $500,000 seems like a small boat when you add it.
No, $500,000 a month. That's $6 million a year.
Yeah.
$500,000 a month. Okay. So you say it's a big boat, right? But you really like it. But you need to say, all right, do I want to give half of the money that I just made on my... No, I want to make more. So all you need to think is not how much I'm paying. Should I save? How can I make more? How can I invest smarter? How can I go? That's just the way I'm... When I listen, that's the way I consider. That's the way I'm picturing everything in my mind. I don't care for boats. I get seasick very quickly. So I try to stay away from boats. But for someone that love boats and I have friends that are seriously passionate about boats, so they'll buy a 60-footer or so on, and because that's what they can afford. Some of them have bigger ones, obviously. But the mind is, no, I need to go and produce so much that would make it 10% of my... Yeah. No, don't think of saving money or not doing it. It's like, okay, I'll get to it once it's it's responsibly a good investment. It's okay, not investment for my leisure time, but I need to go and produce more.
Yeah.
That's a way a healthy mind should think.
Would you ever buy a boat?
All things being relative, I'm probably never going to make the amount of money to own the kind of boat that I would want.
That's fair.
What kind of boat do you want?
That's fair.
Oh, I would want something, you know, nothing less than 50 meters.
Oh, why? Why not say 90-foot or 100-foot boat?
It's just not quite big enough for what I would like to do.
Okay.
And the places I'd like to go. I wouldn't feel comfortable taking a 90-foot boat from here to Tahiti.
Mm. Oh, you're going to cross that. Okay, I got you. That's a major. You are a captain. You're not going to go and say, well, I'm going to put it on a bigger boat, on a ship, ship it. Okay, you're going to actually sail. So you're saying with a 50 meter, you can comfortably sail across the ocean?
Yeah.
Really?
You can.
Interesting.
A lot of them do. And then there's a lot of them that don't want to put the hours on the engines, or for whatever reason, they'll put it on a large cargo ship and ship it over there. In fact, they have ships that are just designed for doing nothing more than yacht transport.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll put 7 or 8 mega yachts on one boat, like Dock Express, it's called.
And they just don't want to put basically the mileage on
They'll do is, with Dock Express, this is probably 800-foot boat, 900-foot. And they'll actually sink it to a certain level, and the back door will drop down. And then they'll start moving these mega yachts on board, and they have underwater divers with welders that, as soon as the boat gets in position and gets tied off, the divers will sit there and they'll weld a cradle in place to hold it while it's still sitting in the water. These guys are under the water doing this work. And they'll be down there until they get all the boats on board that they can physically, you know, capable of handling. And the divers are down there. Sometimes it takes 3 or 4 days, maybe a week, to load up one of these Dock Express boats. Divers are down there welding their asses off. And
is it true that the crew stays on boat?
In place, they put the back door up.
Yeah.
And they pump all the water out, and this thing pops up out of the water.
Mm.
All the water drains off, and then they go about hooking up all the air conditioning lines, you know, so that they can still function. You know, and they have power to it.
Yeah.
And some of the crew stay. I think you're allowed 2 crew on each boat, and they stay on just to monitor all the systems on board. But they have crew quarters where the actual crew on the boat they're carrying across the ocean can stay somewhere else if they like on board.
What were you going to say?
No, that was my point. Like, is it true that some of the crew members have to stay on board when that happens? Yeah.
And then
if they've got like the AC running or something, you don't want to sit there and bust a water line.
Yeah.
You know, all of a sudden you're pumping 300 gallons a minute.
Yeah. And what would be the smallest ship that you'd ever say should try and do a transatlantic or some sort of journey of that size?
Personally, I wouldn't do anything smaller than 50 meters.
People do it, though?
People do it, yeah. I've seen them go 100-foot boats, 120-foot boats. But the North Atlantic, and depending on when you go and when you come back, you know, you've got to pick your weather windows. You got to know exactly what you're doing. And it's boring as hell. You may do an Atlantic crossing and never see another ship. Never see a dolphin, never see a whale, never see anything. The crew is going batshit crazy because they're going nuts. They've already watched every movie that's in your in your library. Yeah. They've read every book on board. You know. And they're staring out at open water for weeks.
How long is the
and
journey?
And see nothing.
Yeah.
But how long is the journey from, say, the Mediterranean to Florida?
About 3 weeks, depending on the speed of the vessel. Or if you run into weather, it can be a lot longer than that.
Yeah, so do you escape it if you see a weather system? Do you go north, south,
You have satellite communications, and you have weather companies that you can call up that track these systems. And they'll look on, you have what they call, that's ARPA, and it'll show up where your boat is at any given point in time, and they can track it. And they'll sit there, okay, you got a system heading here. Here's the route you should take to avoid this weather system. Mm-hmm. That could add 4 or 5 days to your trip. Because obviously you're already taking the shortest route to get there.
Yeah.
But you may have to extend it. And that's when you have to make sure that when you set out on the trip, one, you have enough crew. You're always going to put on extra crew because you're going to have extra people, because you always want two people in the wheelhouse.
Yeah.
24/7, day, night, doesn't matter.
Yeah, two people in the wheelhouse, always. You want that extra set of eyes because it gets that boring that you just need...
Keep them awake and alert.
Sharp.
Yeah, sharp.
I mean, let's say, you know, one of these cargo ships drops a container, you know, they lose a container. Now, a shipping container, which is twice the size of this room, and it's floating 2 feet beneath the surface because it hasn't completely sunk yet. You have no idea, and you don't see it until the last second. And you hit it. You got all kinds of trouble.
So that's
Do you know
scenario.
People it happened to?
I don't personally know.
But it happens.
Yeah.
In the middle of the ocean, you can...
Or some of the... depending on what they're shipping. Like, you get up north, like in Alaska and places like that, where they're shipping logs. Mm. And some of these 100-foot trees, you know, all of a sudden they fall off and they'll sink vertically.
Problem. You can
straight up and down.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, they're only 2 feet or 3 feet beneath the surface. You draw 10 feet or 12 feet.
And what happens if you hit something like that?
If it breaches the hull, you've got serious problems. You better hope that your bilge pumps can keep it up and you can you know, get down there and stuff the hole.
How long do you have?
Depends on how big the hole is.
Well, don't they have those little, I guess, sections of air? So if it breaks one or two, the boat still floats, just like with the Titanic, that add fuel.
Well, you do have watertight compartments. Yeah. Like if it were to hit up by the anchor pockets or something like that, that's a watertight bulkhead.
Okay.
And so you could confine it to that.
But if it's the side, that's where it's more dangerous, right? Because it can damage quite a few.
Well, like Catino, that ripped a hole in the side of the boat that was like, what, 30 or 40, 50, 60 feet long?
Hmm.
You're not going to recover from something like that.
Yeah.
So then you sink and you wait for help, right? You go, everybody go on boats and...
Into the life rafts.
Yeah.
And they always have... What's the
and
law now?
They find you.
They might not find you.
Might not.
Don't they have satellite?
Well, you have your... But the batteries are only going to last so long. Oh. Depends on where you're at. If you're in a shipping lane, odds are, you know, in a few days or so, you know, a ship's going to come by and they're going to pick up your signal.
A few days.
Your EPIRB.
Wow.
And theoretically, your EPIRB should send a signal to a satellite up in the sky that'll relay it to the proper authorities.
Yeah.
And every raft is equipped with its own EPIRB that's registered with the Coast Guard. And so they know who you are when they get that signal. And they know, all right, they're in trouble. This is where we need to go.
Wow.
A lot to think about when you're out there.
There's a hell of a lot to think about. When you actually hit something and say the ship is sinking, what is the saying the captain has to go down with the ship. Where did that come from?
Some fool made that up.
I don't know. I've heard it before. I never understood it, and it always seemed...
Well, the captain should be the last one to step off.
Yeah, but they don't go down,
with it?
Why would you go down with your boat?
It's a saying.
It is.
I don't know why it
happened. No, I think...
Captain goes down with the ship.
No, I think in Japan, and the war when... Second World War, there were one or two stories where the Japanese captains decided to sink with their boats, which there was no reason because they could have left, but it was part of their tradition. So I assume that's where
that's
it came
a bad
from.
Tradition.
There's no reason for you to die. You can go and run another boat. You did a good job.
This captain ain't doing it.
I'm trying to think what else. Okay, so we went into gas. We went into a ton of stuff about yachting and boating that I had no idea. I'm so clueless. Like I'm just
now.
Trying to
now
be, like,
I feel more of a professional. We can go and talk to other people.
And like, now I feel like we can actually have an educated discussion. We should have had a podcast with you before the podcast. Do you want to check if people ask questions on social media?
Let's go and pull your phone.
Because you know what? You're right. I actually haven't watched the show as much as I should have. And it's only because I'm inundated with so much reality TV that I can't take any more reality TV. My brain's going to explode.
Yeah, we don't blame you. We are not blamers. I watched it.
I'm sure there's questions
about
the show.
My ex got me to get into Bravo at the time because we were watching Project Runway, then Top Chef, and obviously Below Deck came through this, and that's how I know Below Deck. But I haven't watched actual TV for a while, so now... Let's look at some questions.
Yes, to show them where it's what we did before, people that are listening and watching.
Scott, you're doing an amazing job as a narrator, so I'm going to give you this one. There's one question here.
Okay, so
Let me show you.
Basically, put out a question to ask Captain Lee, to his audience, to our audience. Okay. So I'll ask one question that came in, and Yosef is going to see if there's more, because I'm sure that there's people that are following you that have questions for you too.
Yes.
But we somewhat touched on this, but we'll go into it again. So is crew attrition as high as it seems, and how do you deal with onboarding new crew all the time? Is that stressful?
It's one of the most expensive things that happens on board a boat is training new crew. High rate of turnover.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times, especially, I think it's generational, because some generations just don't have a good work ethic. And they think that once they get on board, they just, they're going to be sitting on the beach drinking pina coladas.
Yeah.
Until they find out that each exotic country that they visit, well, they have guests on board. Yeah, they're going to see it from a porthole. That's about it.
Yeah.
And if we happen to be there after the guests leave, if we're there for any period of time, and, there's time and we get our work done, then, yeah, you can go ashore. But when they see the amount of work that actually goes into running a boat, a lot of them just aren't prepared for it. They're not ready for it. And, like, what do you mean I have to work past 5? We have guests coming tomorrow. Yeah, you work until you're done and the boat's ready. If that means midnight, then it's midnight. No, I don't care. Do it. Or leave. It's your call.
Cool.
Okay, wait. Where is... Oh, these are the questions.
Yeah, those are the questions. But don't read and just go and screen through the ones that needs to be screened out. So, but you can see the questions over here.
Okay.
Now move to the second one over here.
Oh, how do you rest when the crew is up partying so late?
Usually my quarters is on the very, very top deck. My quarters is right behind the wheelhouse.
So you don't hear nothing.
The wheelhouse is, there's a big sign there. It says knock before entering. And it means what it says.
But it's loud, no, in a close quarter?
Usually that's at the very close to the bow.
Okay.
And most of the partying will take place, on the aft deck, in the party salon, in the bar area, which is, well back from the center line of the boat. It's not even close to being midships.
You ever give them hell for showing up in the morning hungover?
I have on occasion.
As you should. As you should.
And I have no sympathy.
I see.
If it's a self-induced illness, like the bottle flu.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't care. That's when you are fair game. Your ass does belong to me, and I will sweat every ounce of alcohol you've ever ingested out of you.
All right. So I have another one. Are you still in touch with some of the crew members who left the show?
Sure.
I don't even see where those questions are. I keep missing them. I'm sorry.
So overall, we get a lot of other questions, but there are just a lot of things around. We're not going to read those over here.
What are they?
Doesn't matter. Okay. You have to screen stuff. So, Captain, was amazing.
You got to let me look at it.
Well, okay. I'll let you look at one.
One last one.
Here it is. Let's keep the tense and don't tell them what it is. All right, so that was great. Do you have any other remarks, last remarks?
No, I actually really appreciate that, because I was actually pleasantly surprised, because we learned so much about yachting and boating that I didn't know anything about. And I'm happy actually that I actually came out of this smarter about boating. I mean, I still have to watch the show more, so that's...
You know, that was one of the things that Below Deck has done, is that it's put a spotlight on the yachting community. Because, I mean, there's a lot of people in Iowa, Omaha, Nebraska, you know, a lot of the middle of the country. They're like, we can charter a boat? We can actually hire the boat? They had no clue. And there's a lot of good, hardworking kids out there that are looking for a good, solid career. Mm-hmm. The military always says, come see us, we're full of adventures, see the world, get paid while you do it. Well, the military doesn't pay what yachting pays.
Yeah.
It's not nearly as much fun. And besides that, you have people wanting to shoot your ass off.
Yeah.
So we don't have any of that. We pay better, we have a better working environment. You're going to work about the same hours. You are going to get to see the world. And there's a lot of benefits. And that was a career that most kids in the Midwest and said, like, I can get paid to go live on a multi-million-dollar yacht and travel the world.
You're right.
Get paid for it.
I never thought about that coming from, there's boats in Toronto, but I never thought about chartering yachts.
I think Fort Lauderdale is the number one hub for boating.
It's the yachting capital of the world.
It's definitely a thing, and you start to realize it when you come down here. Mm-hmm. And you start boating, and even on the weekends you take out boats and small, it's not like the $500,000 a week yachts.
You can go from here to Jupiter.
I know.
You just sit there and you go, 100-foot boat. It seems like everybody's got one.
Well, it's the only other place in the world I've ever experienced Fort Lauderdale.
This is the place in the world.
You go from Miami to Jupiter, and you could just say you've got a small 30-foot center console, and you're just cruising up the intercoastal, and you see all these canals, and you see all these yachts.
I know.
And it's like, Jesus, there's not that much money in the world, but there is.
There is that much money, and I've never experienced this except when I've been in Monaco. That's the only other spot I've just seen so many insanely large boats.
You know what's funny about Monaco and some places like that in the Mediterranean? Like, you would take the boat I was on, St. David, 200-foot. You'd pull into Monaco, and the people on the other boats would go like, who let them in here?
Yeah.
It's like, oh. There goes the neighborhood.
Yeah.
I mean, because they're 300, 350 feet, 200.
It's also the boats that they have over there. When I saw it, I noticed that the type of boats, you can make 200 and you can make 200 boats.
Right. It's insane.
You can see 200 foot and then you see another 200 feet, and one of them is just built like a palace. It looks like something you've never seen before. And then you see a traditional 200 foot boat, and you said to yourself, wow, just even in the size, there's a different. I remember I saw
in the design, you mean in,
something else? Yeah, I mean, imagine
the builders as well. You know, there's some names that are just equated with, well, it's the same way with cars,
yeah,
Rolls Royce, Bentley,
Yeah.
Ferrari, this is what you expect. This is the standard. This is where they've set the bar.
Mm-hmm.
Boat builders are the same way. You get some people that, you know, want to get away cheap, and it shows in the boat because they're not using the best materials. They're not using the best craftsmen.
Yeah, that's you can see the classes over there. Just there's reach, and then there's a whole new level of reach over there.
Mm-hmm.
And people that kind of like cruise the Mediterranean, I guess they all cruise. I've been there a few times, and what you see is that they cruise because it's so small. So you go from one place to another. So if right now the Grand Prix is in Monaco, and then tomorrow it's the Cannes Film Festival, and that's just going to go. So they'll tell you, now we're here, tomorrow we're there, and they can go from there to Greece, to Israel.
Yeah.
Just a very live attraction, and the boats are going to move. So it depends on the day you were there, and then you're going to see it's empty after.
Yeah.
Because they're all going to move to another one.
Now, a lot
port.
Of times, like if you want to, you always see in the travel magazines when you think about the Grand Prix of Monaco, and you see the boats backed up to where the cars are just screaming by. Well, that dockage right there comes with a premium. You better have your captain walking down the dock to see the dock master with a suitcase full of money, cash.
Do you know what it costs?
And easily six figures.
Just the dock there?
The dockage is going to cost you more than that. That's just for the privilege of him charging you to stay there. And then for the Monaco Grand Prix, he's going to want to know who's on board your boat. And if you don't have the right people on board, you're not getting in.
Huh. So it's not about money sometimes. It's
no.
Rather, you know.
You could just be another billionaire that has a bunch of nobodies on board that nobody ever heard of, and you're not going to get dockside.
Wow.
Now, if you got Leonardo DiCaprio and some of his buddies that want to be there, okay.
Hmm.
Or if you got Oprah, David Geffen, guys like that, Steven Spielberg.
Yeah.
You know. Then
it's a different type of currency.
Then,
right?
Then,
fame
then
is above regular money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So just everybody isn't going to, just because you have the money, doesn't get you in the door.
Yeah. Just being a Russian oligarch doesn't help.
It is crazy.
It's totally insane.
No.
But that's the world that I live and work in.
I love it. All right.
That was great.
Where can people reach out to you? Do you want people to reach out to you?
I'll give them your address.
Yeah. So what are you working on now? So people that are fans, you've been doing the show for 10 years now?
Yeah.
Okay, so you have a book. You've been doing the show for 10 years. What's next for everybody?
I'm thinking of doing another book.
Okay.
A cocktail table book.
Okay.
Maybe of my Captain Lee-isms.
I love that.
Toying with the idea of a podcast.
Good.
Nice.
And I got some other projects that I'm working on.
Good.
That I'm not at liberty to discuss right now.
Deal.
I'm going to scare anybody off. Or I don't want somebody getting there before I do.
Smart. Captain, listen, it was a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us.
Pleasure's mine.
Thank you. I know a lot of entrepreneurs listen to this show, and NetSuite has been a huge supporter for entrepreneurs, for business owners, because there's one thing that we all know. Business is about making money, and it's about your bottom line. And the less you spend on the nuts and bolts of running your business, the more profits you keep. But these days, everything is costing more. Supplies, people, shipping. It squeezes your margins, and I've been there, juggling multiple systems for finance, inventory, you name it. Each with its own costs and its own set of headaches. That's why I made the switch to NetSuite by Oracle. It's changed our company. Think about it. NetSuite is one of the top financial systems out there. It puts your whole business on one platform, accounting, finance, the works.
one data source for everyone. There's no more mismatched info. And because it's in the cloud, it slashes your IT costs. No more servers, no more updates. Just access NetSuite from anywhere. With one integrated suite, your overhead drops big time. And here's the real win. Efficiency. Everything's connected in NetSuite. Costs are ridiculous lately. Find a proven way to reduce your expenses and get better performance out of your team. It's a no-brainer, and that's what NetSuite offers. Over 37,000 companies have figured this out already. You have to join them. Right now, through to April 15th, NetSuite's got an incredible, flexible financing plan. Check it out and see the savings yourself at netsuite.com/Scott Clary. That's netsuite.com/Scott Clary. Just a quick question. Have you ever had one of those oh no moments when you realize that you accidentally deleted a huge file? Or worse, your whole computer dies. I know I have. It's happened to me a lot, but don't sweat it. The sponsor of today's episode, Backblaze, they have your back. It is unlimited backups for all your Macs, your PCs, or even your whole company. And it's really affordable, under $100 a year. If you're running a business, they take the stress out of protecting everyone's data. If you need more bells and whistles for compliance, so on and so forth, they have enterprise options too. Honestly, losing data sucks, but Backblaze makes getting it back easy. They have restored billions of files. They offer tons of restore options, including rapid recovery in an event of data loss or ransomware. And you can access your backed up data from everywhere and anywhere in the world using their web app, iOS, or Android apps. It's been recommended by the New York Times, Inc., Macworld, PC World, LifeWire, Wired, Tom's Guide, 9to5Mac, and tons more. And best, you can try it fully featured with no risk at backblaze.com/story. They set up that link for all Success Story podcast listeners. That is a no-risk free trial at backblaze.com/story. Seriously, back up your stuff. I don't know about you, but the idea of being harassed, scammed, or even worse, all because somebody found my personal information online, that's terrifying. Our political opinions, our addresses, even stuff about our families, it's out there for anyone to grab. And did you know that data brokers are allowed to sell information on over 98% of Americans? It's scary stuff. That's why I've partnered with Delete Me. I personally use Delete Me. They're a big friend of the podcast because I put myself out there online. So safety is a huge concern. It's really scary how easy it is to find someone's details and information, but Delete Me creates a layer of protection that we all need. You tell Delete Me what you want gone, and they make it disappear from those sketchy data broker sites. And Delete Me doesn't stop. They constantly monitor the web to keep your information off those lists. It's like having a privacy watchdog that never sleeps. You need to take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me. They're giving a special discount for all Success Story podcast listeners. Get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/success and use promo code success at checkout. The only way to get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/success and enter code success at checkout. joindeleteme.com/success. Hiring as a small business owner is a major pain. That's why LinkedIn is supporting today's episode. You need people with the right skills and experience, but finding them can take forever. It is incredibly frustrating to keep seeing candidates who just aren't a good fit, and that's why LinkedIn Jobs has been a game changer. Let me tell you a little story. We needed to hire a graphic designer, somebody with specific tech and software knowledge and the ability to truly understand our brand. And I started with all the usual job boards, and it's the same old story. Tons of irrelevant applications. No one's really matching my needs. I tried LinkedIn Jobs, and the quality of candidates was just on another level. People with impressive portfolios, relevant expertise. I finally felt like I was interviewing the right people. That's truly the power of LinkedIn's massive professional network. You're tapping into this huge pool of talent you simply wouldn't find on other sites. It's about finding those niche candidates you actually need. And with the right people in front of you, hiring becomes a breeze. Did you know that 86% of small businesses find a qualified candidate on LinkedIn Jobs within 24 hours? That is how well their system works. Honestly, do yourself a favor and try LinkedIn Jobs next time you're hiring. You can post your job for free at linkedin.com/excellence. That's linkedin.com/excellence. Terms and conditions apply, but it's definitely worth trying out.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.